Welcome to the RSP Cast. This is episode number 90. I am Matt Walden with the Rookie Scouting Portfolio, and joining me in this projection series that's ongoing, we're probably at 20 or a little bit more of the teams that we've been covering that you can find at mattwaldmanrsp.com, is Dwayne McFarland. Dwayne, welcome back.
Hey, excited to be here. Get to talk some more football.
That's right. You know, that's pretty much what we do here. So we go through this stuff, and pretty much we're comparing our projections, player by player in the offenses that we're looking at. We are going to be looking at the New Orleans Saints offense today, and that should be a lot of fun always, because when you're talking about the New Orleans Saints, you're talking about explosive offenses, both in the run game and in the passing game. You know, when you've got somebody like the old vet Drew Brees, who you know, still is probably one of the best quarterbacks in football, even though certain skills may be diminishing. That's up for debate. We've lost Mark Ingram in the mix, but does that mean more for Alvin Kamara? Or is it possible that Latavius Murray gets to play some of that role? Or will it be somebody else that kind of works into the mix with that? And then, of course, when you talk about Drew Brees, you can't forget his shadow from the moment that he was drafted, which was Michael Thomas, who's basically, you know, was smart enough to realize that he needed to basically get with Brees as soon as he got picked and basically attach himself to him until Brees said, look, dude, I got to go to bed and I have a wife and it's time for you to like go back and you can study on your own. And that's produced a great career for him. But is there someone else that can step up along with Michael Thomas? Because last year that didn't quite happen. And we saw some results that weren't so good for him because of the bracketing that was done. And then we have Jared Cook. He might be that possibility. And then we also have Ted Ginn coming back. Does Tre'Quan Smith possibly step up, or is it Keith Kirkwood? And then there's a guy that, I don't know, I talked about last February as a possible sleeper in this draft at wide receiver, who's making noise and being compared to a young Marcus Colston, and that's Emmanuel Butler. That and more, I think, this week. So, you know, Dwayne, before we, you know, really get into the thick of it, one of the things that you like to do and do a very good job of and everyone wants to know about is, you know, kind of like what are the, you know, what's the balance of run to pass with this particular offense, and what are some of the tendencies that you're seeing with what Sean Payton does in New Orleans?
Yeah, and Sean Payton's, you know, best years, it's funny, he has actually been less of a passer. So last year, 52% of his passing attempts, were pass. 52% of his attempts were pass. 48% of his attempts were run. The year before, 55-45. If you go back to, some of the better years, so like 2009, 54-46. So he's a guy that, other than that, though, is a 63-37, 63-37, 62-38, 62-38, 64-36. You know, he's been one of the pass-heaviest guys in the league. However, when he has his running game working and he has his offense set up the way that he wants to have it set up, he is running more. Now, part of that is because in those seasons, you know, Matt, he's leading more, right? So whenever Sean Payton has the lead, that's obviously going to skew the plays over to the run. So if you look at last year, 40% of the plays leading, that's just above the league average. But the year before, 52%, you know. But even if you go back and you look at those years where, you know, the Saints were just, you know, it's funny. The Saints are either a seven win team or they're a 11 or 13. That's all they do. 13, 11, 13, 7, 11, 7, 7, 7, 11, 13. So these are the kind of seasons that they have. But even going back to those 7-win seasons, you know, they really weren't trailing that much more than the league average. So it's going to be a team that, you know, they're going to pass first, right? They will pass early in games whenever they're tied. Last season, Sean Payton passed 58% of the time. That's above the league average. 57% the year before. Before that was always in the 60s. But then once leading, he dips below the league average, and he pops above the league average in rushing percent. So last year he ran 55% of the time whenever the team was ahead. And what's interesting is he also is someone that I don't know if this is just kind of a blip right on the radar kind of data point, but was one of the top teams rushing the ball when trailing. Now, a lot of that does come back to, we talk about margin of victory. So what's the average points by which you lost or won a game, you know, over the course of last season? Well, when your margin of victory is 9.4, which was the highest in the league in 2018, that means that you weren't really trailing by much often. So, you know, he did run the ball even in trailing situations more than the rest of the league last year, but mostly due to the fact that he was within striking distance, right? And the team was comfortable that they could stick with their normal game plan. But overall, as far as an offense goes, you know, the other thing that I've noticed with Sean Payton, Matt, is if you think about the groupings of personnel to whenever it really clicks for him, what was it before now? Right now, it's who you just talked about. It's Michael Thomas. It's Alvin Kamara. We'll see what can happen, right, with Jared Cook stepping into the mix. But remember, before that, it was Sproles and Colston and Jimmy Graham. So what I have seen about Sean Payton, and data and analytics actually support this. Did you know, Matt, that the plays where if you start thinking about taking shots down the field or pushing the ball vertically down the field, the highest percentage area to do that is in the seams.
Yep.
And think how Sean Payton builds his team. You know, and Jay Moyer and I just wrote an article, I don't know, 4 or 5 weeks ago for the RSP that talked about who are the top teams that really utilize their running backs in a very special way to help create very manageable and meaningful, manageable down and distance, and it is meaningful to their offense. And the Saints are on that list too. So when I look at Sean Payton, when he has folks that can work those seams, that can work inside the numbers, high percentage passes, even downfield, paired with an elite quarterback like Drew Brees, and then you have a running back like an Alvin Kamara that can then work underneath that, it's just a real mismatch issue for defenses, right? You know, I mean, are you going to put a linebacker on Kamara? We saw the Dallas Cowboys last year. Anytime the Saints were in a true passing down situation, so like 3rd and 5, 3rd and 6 or longer, or 2nd and 10, 2nd and 9, you know, the normal situations where most everyone in the league passes, the Cowboys ran a nickel or even a dime defense against the Saints. Why? Because they wanted a defensive back on Alvin Kamara. So that's something else, you know, to be watching for. But it's obvious that Sean Payton, you know, his scheme is designed around this, you know. And so I am very interested to see how Jared Cook does fit into this offense. You know, last year, to your point, it was primarily Mike Thomas and Alvin Kamara. And then so teams that did have the bandwidth across their personnel on defense to get a little creative and get some extra guys on the field to help stop that, were able to do it. You put out an article, and we talked about it a few weeks back, about it potentially being an issue for Juju Smith-Schuster in a similar type of way, that you know, Thomas started getting double teamed because teams would then use a DB just to cover Kamara, and so they didn't have to worry about trying to bracket him with a safety and a linebacker or anything because he's such a mismatch. They would just let a DB guard him in coverage, and then they focused everything else on Mike Thomas. So it will be interesting to see this year, what does Jared Cook bring to the picture? You know, can Jared Cook be there, or can Tre'Quan Smith take a step forward, or some of the other younger guys you talked about? Can one of them, you know, put a good enough foot forward to where they can really be more of a three-prong type approach versus really just a two?
Yeah, and I think that that's always the aim for most of these teams, is to be able to have that, you know, rule of three, you know, those triplets, you know. I mean, of course, Dwayne McFarlane, a Cowboys fan, would write about triplets, you know. I mean, that's how that works, you know.
It is how that works.
But then again, yeah. but it is true. I mean, and that's something I've even profiled, I think, in past articles, you know, doing fantasy work with my gut check pieces, talking about here are your teams that have the most likelihood of having triplets who can give you, you know, this certain kind of production that's going to elevate your quarterback and that kind of thing. But when the way you described it to me, I mean, what I hear is Sean Payton's offense. Sean Payton's like the big crime boss. Drew Brees is the stick up man that basically freezes the victim. And then after he extracts the money from them, then, you know, it's Kamara and Michael Thomas that have the crowbars and, you know, they go to work.
Or the getaway car.
Exactly. Or the getaway car. Exactly. Just That's probably even a better example.
That's for Kamara. He's the getaway car.
Yeah, Michael Thomas might be the let's soften him up a little bit so that they don't run after us as fast. Yeah. So, which is kind of the opposite of what you would expect running back wide receiver, but that's how it goes. So, you know, starting off with this pass game, let's do that. I mean, you know, what are your projected splits for this year when it comes to run to pass?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I got so excited. I didn't add that part on. Thanks. I've got them at 1,000 attempts. 55% pass and 45% run. You could see it be a little bit lower or a little bit higher than that, depending on, you know, honestly, some of the variable is luck, right? You know, ball bounces the wrong way. You have a few extra turnovers and all of a sudden you're playing down a few more, you know, snaps than normal, then that's going to jump up a little bit. If it goes the opposite way and if the defense is, you know, playing up to the level that it could potentially also play to, you know, you could see them tighten that down even a little bit further. So I've got 1,000 plays, 55% pass, 45% run. So that's 550 passing attempts and 450 rushing attempts.
Okay. So I'm much lower on passing attempts right now, but I'm right with you on passing attempts. So it's like it looks like I'm at, and I think a lot of it honestly is I'm the way I've got things marked up. You can't see it on my spreadsheet, but I color code things that I want to watch for. And so right now when I'm looking at the rushing attempts, I have something that I have an indicator that says add more basically to the list, but who to add to. And so, you know, sticking with the passing attempts, because we'll get to the rushing part later with the stick up man, Drew Brees, you know, I've got him at 554 attempts. 393 completions at a 70.9%, probably the highest completion percentage that I give any quarterback in the NFL. I think he's earned that. and I think that he's, you know, he tends to be in that range. And I think with Jared Cook, maybe if you asked me 8 years ago about Jared Cook, I would say that's the reason why Drew Brees was going to throw 59% as opposed to 70%. But Cook has improved as a pass catcher, to a level where the latter part of career is looking like the way people expected the early part to be. So, you know, 70.9% completion percentage, 4,561 yards at an 8.23 yards per attempt, pretty aggressive there. 34 touchdowns at a 6% rate, which is pretty high. But it is, you know, again, this just tells you what I think of Drew Brees here. And 15 interceptions, which is a little bit on the higher end, mainly because I think they will have to throw. And I think that some of his receivers may let him down a little bit, just because he doesn't have, you know, that solid second guy yet in the receiving core, even outside of Cook, if we're just going to strictly look at receivers. I have him at about 23 yards rushing. and for some reason, which I need to like literally lower this, and I must have like hit a typo here, because I have 23 rushing attempts and 4 touchdowns. I don't think that makes any sense, Mike.
He had 4 rushing touchdowns last year, 2 the year before, 2 the year before. So just divide by 2.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we'll be all right there. Because I was like, I know that's going to be a couple, but I think that's a little aggressive to give him a...
Well, knowing your thought process, you know, we'll get to these guys in a minute. I know you're not crazy about Latavius Murray. You may have been thinking Drew Brees is going to have to punch more of these things in.
Right, that's true. And, you know, that or just that I love rushing touchdowns. So
you do? Well, that's also true.
Even if it's the quarterback.
Yes, this is also true. This is also true. You know, for me with Drew Brees, real quick, let's just, you know, talk about, you know, him as a player. You know, one of the things that I like to do is look at, you know, all the different elements, right, that go into that we have, at least from a data perspective, on a quarterback. Sure. And so Drew Brees is just one of those guys that you have to kind of sit back and admire. You know, last year he threw for right at 4,000 yards, but he missed a game. So he only played 15 games. Otherwise, he would have been right around where he was the season before, 4,300. You know, so if we think back to these years when the Saints have been the best, last season, the year before, each year Drew Brees would have been at 4,300 yards. If you go back to their Super Bowl year, he was at 4,400 yards, right? So it's pretty interesting, right, the way this all works out. And I think the Saints are one of the best versions of themselves right now that they've been under Sean Payton. This might be the best team they've had. Now, Drew Brees, you were talking about his accuracy and his completion percentage. I mean, it's really, it's insane. I'm just going to go a few years back, 69%, then it went to 68%, but then it went to 70% in 2016, 72% in 2017, 74.4% last year. That's insane. Now, his average depth of target is a little bit lower than what it had been in the three previous seasons, where he had been at 69, 69, 68. So some of it is to do with that, because if you look at, a quarterback's completion percentage, and then you adjust it for average depth of target, you know, the guys that are passing deeper are going to have a lower completion percentage. It doesn't necessarily mean that they're less accurate. So part of this is Breeze's average depth of target. But last year it went up. The year before it had been 6.9 and it jumped to 7.6 and he still hit a 74.4. So to your point around projecting him for like right at 72% completion percentage, I don't think there's any problem with that. The other thing that we've seen is with the emergence, and it makes sense, right? Because Michael Thomas works what? Short and intermediate. Alvin Kamara works short. So they're getting the ball to their two best players. So it's a function of that too. But if you look at what's interesting is despite that lower average depth of target is the yards per attempt has gone up 3 years in a row. So 7.74, yeah. 8.09, and 8.16. So that just speaks to the efficiency that this offense runs with. And the other interesting thing is despite not pushing the ball down the field a ton, I'll get to his deep passing here in a second, touchdowns, the yards per attempt being high, and then also the touchdowns per attempt. You know, last year was a 6.5%. The year before was a little weird. It was a 4.3, but before that, a 5.5, a 5.1, a 5.0. Oh, let's go back to when he still had all those weapons that were similar to the ones he had now, a 6.0, a 6.4, a 7%. So Breeze is a guy that, if you think about the weapons he has, you think about how he likes to play, you think about Sean Payton's scheme. I mean, they're in a real sweet spot here with this pool of talent that they have. Now, the one thing that you hear folks talk about with Drew Brees, it'll be interesting to hear your thoughts around, the film aspect of it, Matt, is you hear about a deterioration in his ability to push the ball down the field. And the stats alone, it just doesn't show up. I mean, the guy's completion percentage is elite the last 3 years deep, 51%, 51%, 51%. That's going to be top three in the league every year in those 3 years. He and Russell Wilson are at the top, together in each of those years. Now he doesn't attempt as many of those. It's like a calculated thing, right? It's Breeze sees the read. They have the right play call on, and he's just not going to let you off the hook once that happens, is the way it seems to play out for him. 11% of his passes last year were deep, over 15 yards, 11% or over 20 yards, sorry, 11% the year before that, 10% the year before that. But if you look even back, Matt, to like his younger days, he was never really over that. An 11.8, a 12.3 is the highest you've ever seen. So really, he's right in line with his career averages. His number of attempts that he throws deep have not dropped off. His completion percentage has not dropped off. His percentage of his yards that come from deep throws has not dropped off. Now, the 2 years before, his touchdown percentage that had come from deep balls had dropped off, but he's never been super dependent on it. Last year, that was at 28% of his touchdowns came on throws over 20 yards, which is right back in line with pretty much just below his career average. And when we're talking touchdowns versus the number of attempts you're making and your completion percentage, that's just you're going to have more variability in that. That's just because that's the way touchdowns work, right? So when I sit here and look at it, and I'm going to pause a second because I want to get your thoughts on what you're seeing on film. I don't get the narrative right now. Now, I get it. He's getting older and it could happen at any point because, we saw it happen with Peyton Manning. We've seen it happen and folks talk about it with Brady as well. But what do you see with Drew Brees whenever you think about his deep passing game?
Yeah, I don't see any change. And really, I'm going to just hypothesize on why people are noting the change, because I think it's important. It gives you a little bit more critical thinking when you're looking at analysis from around the web and in this industry that we're in. Okay, the first possible reason why people mistakenly think that Drew Brees doesn't have the arm strength that he did anymore is that they may be watching the end of the season, where every quarterback's arm strength is kind of about the level of a limp noodle. So they might have seen some throws with that where they started to look at it from that standpoint and pair it with his age. The second, possibility is that they've seen isolated throws that were challenging plays that maybe other quarterbacks who have stronger arms would have made with more velocity than Breeze, and they were uncharacteristic types of targets for what he normally does and has never really been in his wheelhouse. But they haven't really noticed that on that level, and they just made the conclusion. And then I would say probably the more likely one, you know, sad to say, is, you know, they're talking out of the side of their head. They're on the middle of a podcast, or they're writing something, and it's a safe assumption that when you get older, that your arm gets weaker. So you're going to make that assumption as you go, rather than actually analyze it up that in close. Because over the past few years, some of the best deep throws that I've seen have come from Drew Brees, and sometimes going to receivers who you would not see as likely recipients, but it's always been the case. I've seen him do it with Lance Moore back in the day, with little known slot receiver. So I'm doing it with Austin Carr recently, you know, just put the ball in a place where you're just like, that's just, it's just crazy what he can do. And oftentimes he does it under extreme levels of pressure. I mean, you know, I've talked about recently in some of my work that's at the MattWaldmanRSP.com, you know, I talked about Devonta Freeman, who we profiled, you know, in our previous projections episode, is one of those players that, you know, if you were building a team in some sort of, you know, imaginary scenario and somehow the only thing of it, you know, you had a list of players that you really wanted, but there's some guys that may not be at the top of your list, but if someone just said circumstances are the way it is and these players got handed to you, you just kind of smile, say thank you, and run off like a bandit in the night, you know, that you got that player. And Devonta Freeman's one of those guys for me at running back. And right now, Drew Brees is that way for me in a land filled with guys like Deshaun Watson and still Tom Brady and Patrick Mahomes and Carson Wentz and, you know, all those types of players that people go nuts about. Honestly, like, if you gave me Drew Brees, I'd feel like that you just gave me the weapon to beat any of those other guys. And that we'd find a way, even if he couldn't do it one-on-one himself. He'd be the type of player to do that because he's just so good at reading defenses. He's fantastic at finding the open passing lanes in crowded pockets. He's, you know, he still has that fantastic accuracy. He can, and one of the things that he's always been great at is ball fakes and movement, on designed rolls. And he's a guy that will literally trick you in ways. I was showing this recently too, where he'll see an adjustment I saw it against the Jets, where he saw a safety or a linebacker adjust. He points out to his receiver and points to the man who's going to be coming on the blitz. And it makes it look like what he's saying is, you know, block him. When in fact, what he's doing is he's telling him, I'm pointing at you because I want him to think you're going to block him, but you're just going to like fake it like you're going to, and then you're going to slip right past him into the open flat and just, I'll take care of it from there. And the play breaks off for a 30, 40 yard gain. And I wouldn't be surprised at all if this was just kind of like a Brett Favre-ian like adjustment in the playground. Cause when you get old enough, you know, earlier on in your career, and I'll end it this way, earlier on in your career, usually it's about how much technique you can show, whether you can follow the rules, whether you know all the concepts and you can whiteboard well, and you know every little detail of what you're supposed to do. And that's what happens when you're a young pro. When you start to become an old pro, you have that return to the age of innocence, as William Blake might say, and you would actually start playing a little more playground because you know enough about what's going on to say, you know what? This is the rules. This is the scheme. This is what's going on. I can tell you everything technically. You know, it'll beat it. I'm just going to make this one little adjustment so that the defender thinks I'm just covering this aspect of it, when in fact, you know, I'm going to be a little bit more creative on that end and just make this one little adjustment to with one player, as opposed to younger players who are making adjustments to, you know, the other 10 players on the field, and making sure, I got that blitz call pick up right, and I was able to get the, you know, make sure that the line had their call right, and I was able to do all of this. And they forgot that maybe that one singular detail, that one little added thing, back in the day that you might have noticed when you were 8 years old playing football out in the backyard. Now you can see it with the same clarity as a, you know, near 40-year-old or in your early 40s, and be able to do that now with much more, you know, through the complexity of everything on a much more complex scale. And that's Drew Brees in a nutshell.
Yeah, I like what you talked about with the pressure. His completion percentage under pressure, you know, I color code all of these things. You know, basically it's like a heat map, right? And looking over, you know, I've got pressure data all the way back to 2007. It's green every year, except for like 2 years where it's just white. So, which still, it's at the average. I mean, the guy's completion percentage last year was 61% against pressure. I mean, wow. Like the guy, yeah. Now he will throw more. About the only way you get Drew Brees to throw interceptions is to pressure him. The problem is, you know, he's not as likely to burn you big with a touchdown as some other quarterbacks are when you bring pressure, but he's very likely to get the ball out to the right read quickly and you give up an easy first down you really didn't want to give up, right? That's what happens.
Yeah, he's a body blow puncher. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. So, and I think some of that comes back to, you know, if you think about, and maybe that's even playing into what some people may think about with his arm strength, because he doesn't see that call and then, you know, just fling it down the field. You know, he plays to his strengths very well. You know, obviously when he's kept clean, I mean, it's elite. I'm not even going to talk about it. Most people should understand it. All I see is a bunch of green in front of my face right now. So there's no, yeah. There's not even one yellow or slightly red box on my whole screen, you know? So, I mean, he's just a guy that's really good, you know, in many different areas. He understands the game. Like you said, you know, he does everything, you know, so well. And I'm with you, you know, if we're talking about a fantasy draft here, I own Drew Brees quite a few times and I'm getting him after people take Kyler Murray. I mean, I'm getting him after, you know, I've seen him go after Ben Roethlisberger, and it's not that I don't like Ben Roethlisberger, but I mean, I love Drew Brees, you know. Now, yeah. From a fantasy perspective, is he going to throw for 5,000 yards? No, probably not. But it's not like it's outside the range of outcomes. If all of a sudden their defense falls apart and they're playing, you know, more even football games, or if they're playing from behind more, if that equation changes at all, he's totally capable, right? It's not that he can't do it. It just really comes down to what's the game script. So, you know, and the Saints are so good right now. They lead early and often. It's similar to the Rams that they can take their foot off the gas from a standpoint of passing the ball, you know, in big chunks down the field. Whenever it gets to the fourth quarter, they just don't have to do it, you know? So it's like, okay, let's not get the quarterback hurt and let's not turn the ball over and we'll be fine. We'll just go ahead and win this game by 14 points. So with me for Drew Brees though, where I have him as far as projections go, I've got him right now at 550 attempts, 72% completion rate. That's 396 completions. So I've got him at 8 yards per attempt. You know, he's been over 8 the last 2 years. Got him at 4,400 yards. He was on pace for right under 4,300 last year, and as well as, you know, the year before, which we talked about. And he's one of those guys that I don't mind, like Russell Wilson, I don't mind giving him a higher percentage when it comes to touchdowns per attempt, just because he's been so consistent with it the last few years. And it's like you say, you know, it's just where he's at, you know, as an old pro. Like if he sees when he sees the coverage he wants and he sees he's got the matchup he wants, his ability, it's not just he sees it, it's just the percentage of time he executes on it. It's like crazy. When you watch him, it's like you can, it's like you said, I like trying to see what I think he's seeing, which obviously I never can. He's Drew Brees. But after replaying it, you do see it and you're like, oh, that's what he saw. He's just so good at identifying it, A, but then B, a lot of players get to the point where they get better and they can identify it, but can they execute on it? And that's where he's so efficient. So I got him at 5.5% for touchdowns per attempt. So that's 30 touchdown passes, 8 interceptions. I've got him at 1.5% there. I've got him at 20 rushing yards and I do have him at 2 rushing touchdowns, Matt. So, the final line, 4,400 yards, 30 touchdowns passing, 8 interceptions, and 2 rushing touchdowns with 20 yards.
So I'm higher on the interceptions, slightly higher on the passing touchdowns. And And then I would say, and then wildly higher on the rushing touchdowns, but we'll work on that. So going to the rest of this passing game. I mean, certainly we go to Michael Thomas, and it feels like on one end that you should just look at his end results and say, well, it's just going to be another good year for Michael Thomas. What's changed really? He's healthy. Drew Brees is healthy. Offensive line is healthy. They still got Kamara. Why not? He can be, fantastic player on that end. But then as what you alluded, you talked about a little bit, was my article looking at, him facing Carolina twice, the Dallas Cowboys, and an Atlanta Falcons defense that was pretty much, had lost all its feathers. And it was at a point where you look at where Michael Thomas was, and the successful bracketing of him was even to the extent that sometimes linebackers were willing to just let linebackers cover Alvin Kamara if they had athletic enough guys like the Cowboys. And sometimes come what may, it was fine. They were maybe they were willing to give up a chain moving game to Kamara as opposed to what they might have to give up to Thomas, which would be more of a, maybe a 15 to 30 yard play as opposed to a 7 to 15 yard play. And they seem to be like, yeah, let's just make him move the ball a little bit more and go from there. So when I look at Thomas, I still have him at a strong level, but he's not quite, when I look at how I've projected him, I don't think it comes out as strong when I end up having to rank all these guys based on their projected performance, because I have Thomas right now at about 148 targets, 115 catches, 1,322 yards at about 11.5 yards per reception and 7 touchdowns, which is still very strong, but it may be a little lower than what I've noticed some people have for him.
Yeah, and I think it's easy to project him for more just because if you look at it over the last 2 years, he was a 26%, 2 years ago, 26% of the targets, 11 yards per catch. His average depth of target was a 10. Last year, it bumps up to 28%, of the team's targets. His average depth of target dropped down to a 7.9, and he averaged 11 yards per catch. The year before, it was a 12. So, I mean, the production's been there, and I think now you add another layer. Not that Jared Cook is elite, but it's also something where you trust Sean Payton as well to figure out ways to protect him, right, from some of this. Now, what I noticed in the first preseason game the other night, now Drew Brees didn't play, but Teddy Bridgewater did, and they had all of the starters in there with Teddy Bridgewater. I didn't see, and this could literally be nothing. This is one little small data point from the preseason. Right. But Mike Thomas was not lining up in the slot. He lined up out wide. I have to go back and look at my chart, but I want to say he lined up wide every play. And it was Traquan Smith who was lining up more in the slot. So that's something that we'll have to watch. I don't know what's going to happen with that, but it might just be Sean Payton trying to push. He may want to get different looks from Michael Thomas in the preseason just to figure out, hey, if these sort of things start happening, can I put him outside, and still create mismatches for him, that sort of thing. So, I mean, I think it's something, to monitor. But where I have Thomas right now, I still have him at 27% of the targets. I've got him at 149 targets with 110 catches right now. So I've still got him really high. I've got him at – actually, hang on. Make sure I'm looking at the right thing. Yeah, I am. Sorry. I've got him at 1,200 yards receiving, and then I've got him at 8 touchdowns. So, and part of it is just the catch rate that this guy gets. I mean, when you're working 8-9 yards down the field and you got a quarterback that's as accurate as Drew Brees, I've got him, his catch rate's a 75%. That's normally a number you reserve for running backs, Matt. But Thomas's skill set plus Brees's skill set plus the scheme is like this perfect mesh. He's used, it's similar to really, I mean, he's like a Jarvis Landry type, like on steroids, really, because he's the lead guy in his offense. He's a little bit bigger than Landry, so he's a better option down towards the red zone. But it's just a guy, it's hard for me to get him down too low. Now, where he gets dinged is I've only got him at 11 yards per catch, right? So that hurts him a little bit, but still comes out, if you're a fantasy player in like a points per reception league, I still have him at 280 points.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, that's still, that's
what'd you have for catches again?
I had 115 catches.
So yeah, you're still, I mean, it's, I think there will be certain, I think what we're going to see, Matt, this year is the teams that have the capability, if they, if New Orleans doesn't adapt or if someone else doesn't step up to help with this, which I think they do believe Jared Cook will be part of this, because if you think about the area that, that Jared Cook works in, now he's not Jimmy Graham, but they can try to use him in some similar ways to the way they used to use Jimmy Graham along with Marquise Colston. Colston used to be the Michael Thomas, right? Right. So I think what we will see, though, is for the teams that have the capability to, you know, where they've got the depth on defense to try some different things, I think what we could see is maybe Mike Thomas will occasionally have more of these blip games where we're like, what happened? Why all of a sudden did he go from being a 12 catch guy every week to this week he got held to 5 catches for 40 yards? And I think what we could see is a few more of those overall, as overall production still comes out about the same. It'll just be about maybe a little bit more inconsistency here and there, unless Sean Payton can adapt for that.
Yeah. And I'm that's why, like, while I caution about what could happen, I still have him fairly high. You know, it's just that I took a little bit of the edge off. And I think a lot of that did have to do with Jared Cook and his presence, which we'll get to in a little bit here. But, you know, when we start talking about the other receivers, that's where the mystery is. Because, you know, Tre'Quan Smith was the higher end draft pick. I haven't heard much great stuff about him in camp. Doesn't necessarily mean that he won't have a good season. But I thought he was an overdrafted player, to be honest. Like, I didn't think he had great technique. He was very athletic, but he was athletic, but he didn't run great routes. I didn't think that he had fantastic technique. I thought he, but the Saints know how to use guys who are not multidimensional and get a lot of use out of them. I mean, like, I've always joked that if Drew Brees is like the survivor man of quarterbacks, he could probably rub two sticks together that are soaking wet in a monsoon and still produce a fire, and those wide receivers being the soaking wet sticks, you know? So, you know, I don't know if Tre'Quan Smith is a wet stick or not, but I would say that it certainly looked a little damp to me when he was a rookie, you know, and there might be a little fungus on it. I don't know. He's a guy that I have for 40 targets, 24 catches, 318 yards, and three touchdowns. And the reason that I have him kind of this low is that there's so many other options that could be compelling, and I'm waiting to see how that really translates onto the field with preseason. Because, you know, Ted Ginn comes back, and yeah, he's old, but he's still fast. He's like Daryl Green was a cornerback out of Texas A&I for Washington who – you know, mm-hmm. Yeah, I know you don't want me to talk about him, but you know,
I have mad respect for Daryl Green.
Yeah, but you know, but no, I mean, you know, he's a guy that probably can still beat, you know, he could probably still beat some of the guys who talk trash about how fast they are in the NFL. I mean, he was unbelievable that way. And Ted Ginn still has that kind of speed. And when he can stay healthy, Drew Brees still finds him. So, you know, I'm kind of being cautious with Ted Ginn and thinking, you know, caught in the sense of respecting him enough to say 47 targets for Ted Ginn, 30 catches, 456 yards and 6 touchdowns. Like, he will be back and end up being like one of the receiving leaders in this offense in terms of touchdowns. But then, you know, again, you've talked about Breeze picking his spots a little bit more. Can King stay healthy? Keith Kirkwood's been a talk of camp. People said that he might be the best receiver that's been in terms of performances in training camp, and he's got he's kind of a big body guy with some athletic ability. I have him at a, you know, similar range as Ginn, Smith, and, you know, those two guys. I'm at 45 targets, 35 catches, 450 yards and 3 touchdowns. So you can see that I'm kind of like hedging my bets, waiting to see who comes out of all of this. And most of all, the guy I'm rooting for to come out of this, because I liked his game so much, and he reminded me of a young Marcus Colston. He reminded me of a guy that I hadn't seen a guy in a couple of years who just seemed so confident in being able to win the ball at the level that he did. And that was not even just at the division he was in with NAU, the Northern Arizona, but it was just when they would move up a grade and play the likes of Arizona State, you know, or Arizona, and he would still, make plays like that. Like he made NFL caliber plays on the football, and that's Emmanuel Butler. He's, you know, I'm at 35 targets right now, 21 catches, 244 yards and a couple of touchdowns. And that's sky high optimistic at a point of just a training camp wonder, but he's a guy that has gotten attention from Drew Brees, from Sean Payton, from his teammates and defenders that face him, and how he just moves and handles himself, and that he just consistently gets it done. And I could see him being that big slot counterpart in this offense, to where Thomas moves outside, but when they need to move him inside, Matt Butler can still win the ball on the perimeter. Even though he's not extremely fast, he's quick, he's physical, he runs pretty good routes, and he's got a good first step after the catch. So he's a guy that I just wouldn't be shocked at all if he turns into being like a real good player, like a quality NFL starter. And with Drew Brees, I mean, you give him that, and that's not a, you know, that's not a wet stick, you know. So you know you give him that, and this, you know, you're talking now maybe a dominant guy, a guy who could be dominant in the red zone, or a guy who can be at least a catch magnet and a short and a check down guy, or someone who could just give you a lot of versatility. And instead of them just going, well, we can use this wet stick to kind of dry off this wetter stick, and then we can, you know, put this, you know, rearrange it in this way, and, you know, kind of, instead of using like four or five receivers to get the job done, they might end up having to, they might not have to use as many situationally if Emmanuel Butler can come through. So that's kind of the quagmire that I have for this Saints receiving core that's behind Michael Thomas. Who interests you out of this group?
Well, you know, looking at the first preseason game, you know, I charted all those plays. So what I and again, this is just one data point, but what I saw was in 11 personnel, Traquan Smith and Ted Ginn were both always on the field while Teddy Bridgewater was out there. Once they went to 12, which is two tight ends, or they went to 21, which was, you know, tipped for the Saints, it's a fullback usually. So in those situations, the guys, they split. Ted Ginn and Traquan Smith. Ted Ginn had three snaps in those plays, and there were five. Traquan Smith had two. Mike Thomas obviously stayed on the field for all snaps. Jared Cook was also, he remained on the field for every snap. So the way I'm looking at Traquan Smith and Ted Ginn this year is pretty similar to you. I think really what they're going to look at them for, you know, I've got Michael Thomas as the number one target on the team. I've got Kamara as the number two target. I have Jared Cook as the three. I really have these two guys mixing together, right? I've got Traquan slightly above Ted Ginn right now, but it was more out of, I didn't know what to expect. You know, now we're starting to get some data points in, but I basically have them really close. I've got Traquan Smith at 13% and I've got Ted Ginn at 10%. And it's honestly an offense where, Matt, I've left right here, I've left about 10% open for me to allocate elsewhere once some of this stuff clears up in camp. The names I've been hearing are the same ones that you mentioned, which are Emmanuel Butler and Keith Kirkwood. So those, you know, they let Cameron Meredith go. So I see that as being a situation. Now they did sign, I think, Rishard Matthews. I think they also have what, little Jordan Humphrey is on their roster. I know he played late the other night, you know, the receiver out of Texas. It's still TBD basically for me. So I'm basically looking at it as, we know who the lead three guys probably are. And then, you know, the number four guy is like a combination of Traquan Smith and Ted Ginn Jr. Now that could change for me in preseason.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that makes total sense. And, you know, it's one of those situations where, I mean, you know, it's fairly fluid. I think what we do know is as you mentioned, is it's basically the Kamara, Michael Thomas, and Cook show. And, you know, maybe you'll get something interesting from one of these other guys. So,
you know, one thing I did see with Traquan, yeah, just like a note, I was just looking at my notes. Sorry. They may like him as a blocker, is what I'm wondering, because so they ran a screenplay to Kamara on Traquan's side, And then they were doing some interesting stuff with, as far as running, they ran it multiple times to Traquan's side, and they were actually motioning him down the line, and they were putting him just outside of the tight end, kind of in this tight, you know, set. And then they would run the ball towards his side. They did it with Ginn, I want to say once maybe, but they seem to be trying, you know, they were used like they like maybe what they see with Traquan, and I'm not the best at evaluating somebody as a run blocker, but he seemed to do his job really well on those specific plays. He made a couple of, you know, blocks that actually they were good enough for his guy to then get around the corner or get by his, you know, get past him. So I don't, that may, you know, that kind of stuff obviously also factors in to how they're deciding, you know, this thing is going to work. But as far as the levels of the offense, I do think that Traquan and Ted Ginn both work deeper. Now, it was interesting to see Traquan working in the slot this whole time in that game the other night. That was kind of interesting. So that's something to watch. But for Traquan, I've got him at 43 targets, 650 yards, and 4 touchdowns. I've got Ginn at 55 targets, 33 receptions, and 3 touchdowns. If fantasy players are interested in this, they could very easily swap positions, and Ted Ginn could easily, you know, I actually, after watching that game, was kind of leaning a little bit more towards Ted Ginn. You know, I just haven't changed anything yet. But if you're looking at one for fantasy, Ted Ginn's the guy that you basically get for free. Right. So you can just take him at the end of a draft, and you've got a receiver on, you know, a really good offense with Drew Brees. You know, he's not going to be the lead target, but you know, he's good at what he does, right? Which is work the deep areas of the field. And to your point, he could still run, you know, so he could end up having some value. Jared Cook, which is who I'm super interested, you know, to hear what you have. I've got him at 15%. You know, of the targets. I didn't give him, you know, like Jimmy Graham type of love. You know, you read a lot out there. Oh my gosh, he's going to be, you know, he has a chance to be Jimmy Graham. I don't see him as having as broad of an application as Jimmy Graham. Like what I've seen from Jared Cook, even though he's improved, he's not somebody that's excellent playing above the rim. He's okay. He's still not excellent playing through contact and with contact. That can still cause him to drop the ball. Where he is really good is if he's in a zone and a seam, he has good speed. He's a good mismatch, and his run after the catch is really good. So I like those things about him, and I definitely think that Sean Payton's going to utilize those things, but I have him at 15% of the targets. So that's 83 targets. I've got him at 58 receptions. I've got him at a 70% catch rate, which will be the highest of his entire career, but that's because he's paired with Drew Brees. So it's not as much about Cook as it is about you're getting to play with Drew Brees. And then I've got him at 13 yards per catch, which is pretty healthy for a tight end, but I think it fits his athletic profile and the fact that I just see them hitting him on some of these seam plays where he's going to have room to run. And I imagine we're going to see one or two where it's, you know, Drew Brees is going to hit him in stride 20 yards down the field, splitting the safeties, and he's going to take it the next 20 for a touchdown. I think that's more likely the type of play we see from tight end versus what we used to get with Jimmy Graham, which was basically mismatch no matter which safety or linebacker were lined up on him. I think it's going to be more selective with Cook, but I think it does help the offense overall. I do also have him at 4.5 touchdown receiving.
So this is going to be fun because, you know, for me, Jared Cook, the biggest issue with Jared Cook to me was he would make fantastic catches and then he would drop the ball. And that was what his career was like for the first, I would say, 2/3 of his career. And why he's moved around so much is that people go, we're going to take advantage of that big athletic guy and he's going to grow into his own and we're going to work with him. And yeah, whatever. None of that happened. And you were amazingly inconsistent enough that, you know, the Packers needed a tight end. And it was like, he was just good enough, but they didn't want to keep him, you know, hold on to him for what they'd have to pay really long term. And, you know, when you look at Cook, I think he's going to get a lot of targets. I think he's going to be the second leading target producer, you know, in this particular, on this offense. I'm at 101 targets. I think he's going to get 68 catches. I'm going to, you know, which is still a pretty high percentage rate for Jared Cook. I can't, you know, when you said
Drew Brees,
I'd like to say that
for all ships when it comes.
I'm still a little shaky on it because when you said 70, there was a part of me that's going, yeah, I can't wait to talk about this with Jared Cook and him dropping the ball. But he's gotten better at that.
Well, if he wasn't Jared Cook, I'd have him at a 75 or 80. So
there you go.
I did discount.
Cool. And I'm just laughing because I'm saying that, but then I look over at what I've got and I go, oh, that's 68% I've got for him. So that's exactly.
Hypocrite.
So yeah, I'm at 68% at 68 catches, 896 yards, the same 13 yard per catch average you do. And I have him at 8 touchdowns. Like, I'm confident in, like, yeah,
wow,
I feel like Jared Cook is going to be a guy to own in fantasy leagues this year. I think he's a guy that's really, you know, he may not be Jimmy Graham in terms of going up and winning the ball, but he's better after the catch than what Jimmy Graham's been for a number of years. And he may be a better route runner now than what Jimmy Graham has been. And, you know, you put all that together and it's like, Jared Cook should have had a career mentioned in the same breath as Jimmy Graham. So I'm willing to suspend disbelief for a year and say Jared Cook's finally going to show us that year, because he's no longer playing for Jeff Fisher twice, and he's not. and I hate to say that because it's one of my favorite teams.
He and Kenny Britt, man. He and Kenny Britt both got double doses of Jeff Fisher.
Yeah. I liked Mike Heimerdinger. I will have to say that when Mike Heimerdinger was running that offense, that was pretty nice when they spread the field and Steve McNair won co-MVP. You know, that was great. But, you know, Kenny Britt couldn't catch. He had issues catching the ball in key situations, and he had some issues with that kind of downfall. And Jared Cook kind of did that too. So, you know, not all of that may have been on Fish, but at the same point, you know, Cook is a guy that I definitely think you look at the seam routes. You look at the fact that unlike Jimmy Graham, you can split him outside and he can be a compelling option on the outside to move Michael Thomas inside. Or you could put Thomas and Cook on the outside. And that means whoever they decide to put in the slot, whether it's, you know, might actually have some nice opportunities there too. So I think that he gives a lot more versatility to this offense than what they've had with guys who were almost on that level, because athletically they moved a little like a move tight, you know, a Josh Hill, a Dan Arnold, guys like that. So I think Cook gives him the real deal for the first time since then. And remember, Ben Watson had a Pro Bowl season.
Well,
you know.
Yes, yes. And I think the other thing that's nice for him, Matt, is Jimmy Graham, even back in the day when he was doing, you know, all of his damage and was, you know, for fantasy players, you know, always a top two tight end, right? Between him, Gronkowski. The nice thing for Cook here is that Jimmy Graham used to have to come off the field for about 40% of the snaps because he was a terrible blocker. Jared Cook the other night, I don't know how you rank him as a blocker. I never graded him in that way, but they kept him on the field for every single
play. You know, Jimmy Graham, I will just put it to you this way. The story I tell about Jimmy Graham the most is watch him at the Senior Bowl, you know, a basketball player who was just getting transitioned to being more of a big receiver. And I remember him there with the USC tight end who, I think his last name was Bird. If I remember correctly, I may not have his last name right, but he was a USC tight end who was a decent mid-round prospect who played a little bit for the Rams, I think. And they were doing a drill with the body-sized heavy bag that's kind of like shaped like a weeble wobble, you know, like you hit it and it goes down and pops back up. And the job was to like use your hands very efficiently and quickly to deliver a punch with pop, kind of that whole Bruce Lee 1-inch punch kind of force thing. And you see, Bird hit the thing very briefly, just very light, not much arm movement. And that big old 6'2", 6'5", 7-foot pad, whatever it is, goes flying to the ground and rebounds back up. Jimmy Graham tries to do it, and the thing literally moved less than what a watch would in 5 minutes. Like it was literally like 5 degrees, like, you know, 5-10 degrees. It just barely, and he kept trying to do it and just couldn't do it. And he just never had the technique. So when he wanted to get paid like a wide receiver, I kind of understood, because it was kind of an insult to tight ends to actually have him be paid like a tight end, even though, you know, maybe they used him quote unquote in that role. 'Cause he was not a tight end. So okay, let's move on. You know, we obviously, you know, we're left here with the running back, so we should kind of get. I just
gave Cook a bump because I only gave 85% of the touchdowns away on this team so far because I wasn't sure, you know, about Cook. I mean, I felt okay about it, you know, but hearing you talk through that, you know, gave me enough. I don't have him to where you do, but I've got him at 6 touchdowns now. And I've still got some wiggle room still there. Well, I think that was
I'm
good.
Glad.
That
I'm
was good to hear
because now next time I'm on the audible, when Sigmund Bloom calls me a wet blanket, I'll say, well, you don't listen to Matt Waldman's RSP cast. Cause if you did, you'd see all the sunshine that I'm putting out here. That's causing Dwayne to go against his better judgment and raise his projections. But moving to the Saints. I mean, listen, moving on to the run game, or otherwise known as how many touchdowns is Matt Waldman going to give the running back?
I'm just going to show
we have Alvin Kamara, and certainly Sean Payton has talked about that. We like how this whole dynamic has worked for him over the years. Where yes, we understand Mark Ingram's gone. We've got Latavius Murray. We feel pretty good about Latavius and what he does. But there may also be other guys that may be involved in the equation for what Murray does, because we don't necessarily think that we need to give a lot more carries to Alvin. I know that a lot of people are presuming that, but that's not really where we want to go. We like the balance of what we give to him, and it's worked well for us. And it has worked well for him. He's a high yardage producer, both in the running game and passing game, and he gets a crap ton of touchdowns, in this particular scheme, even though he doesn't get a ton of touches that other guys would to earn to even come close to that amount. So when you look at this, I mean, I haven't really changed his attempts very much because of what they've said. And I've kind of been thinking, you know, I'm not in love with Latavius Murray as a player. I've kind of joked on Christopher Harris's podcast yesterday that the way Latavius Murray has always moved is very unconventional, at to say the least. He's big and he's fast and he's strong and he can catch because he used to be a tight end at University of Central Florida early on in his career. And that was kind of his main position before he became a decent college running back. And, you know, but the way he moves and the way he processes information, it's kind of like watching Elaine Bennis on Seinfeld dance at the party. It's kind of like it can get kind of crazy and ugly. And so I figured that was good enough that if Chris guffawed about that, I figured it was good enough to mention it twice. But yeah, so looking at this, I have 207 attempts for Kamara and 942 yards and a 4.5 per carry. I've met 112 targets, 86 catches for 756 yards, close to 9 yards per catch, and 5 touchdowns in the passing game. And, you know, I only have him at about 6 touchdowns rushing. I'm just kidding. I have him at 15 touchdowns.
Oh, my God. Jesus. Killing me, Smalls. Killing me. Goodness gracious.
I was thinking maybe I'd say I had him at 50 and then like say, but no, seriously, I only have him at 15. But I figured that I'd play up the high effect here. But yeah, I'm going to have to pay.
Hey, his touchdowns per carry is as elite as it gets. So, I mean, last year was at a 7.2%. The year before was a
6.7%. I do have him at 7.2%. Yeah, so hasn't really changed much with that. But I do have him marked in yellow, which for me is caution. Let's tailor this back a little better. Keep an eye on doing that.
Right, and if you're a fantasy player, you know, it doesn't matter anyway. Kamara's going to go, and you're going to take Kamara in the first 3 picks, most likely. So. So I mean,
tomato,
nothing's changed.
Or eight, okay, you know.
Yeah, it's like he's one of the top guys. Yeah, I'm with you. I don't see them giving more work to Alvin Kamara in the ground game, and the reason why is he's so valuable to their passing game. So it's so funny. I don't know if anyone on here has never gone back. Actually, I think Smart Football. I think Chris Brown posted a link to it again yesterday. It's an article I've read like 4 times, but it's from the New York Times like in 2006, and it's on Mike Leach. But the part in there, it's like, I don't know, it's probably 10 paragraphs in. But Mike Leach, it would talk about Mike Leach coming in at halftime, you know, Matt, and Cody Hodges was his quarterback at the time. And he said, Hodges, Leach would never talk about the score. He'd never talk about anything. The only thing he would ask, you know, his, you know, the charting guys is what percentage of the time have we thrown it to X? What time, how much percentage have we thrown it to the Z? How many times have we thrown it to the slot at blah, 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 blah. You know, and Leach goes on to talk about, you know, making teams respect every area of the field. When I think about Kamara and they come in at halftime, there's no distinguishing between the rushes and the targets. It's basically, has Kamara right. been given his opportunities, right? And he's getting them. He's getting them. I mean, the guy's going to see 100 targets probably. I've got him projected for 99. I have him still as the number two target on the team. You know, I think you have Cook at number two, but it's at 18% of the targets for Kamara. I mean, that's insane, you know, for a running back. 18 to 20% is really, really big. And so because of his value in that way and how they utilize him and the fact that he's so effective being used that way, I don't see any reason to try to expose him to even more, especially when you have a really good offensive line. And despite Latavius Murray's inefficiencies, he does give he is good at tiring out a defense. He's a load to bring down. You know, he gives you that physicality. You know, he's by no means within 10 tiers of being the same running back that Kamara is, but he's good enough for that offense. He can fill the role they want. So when you're ahead, you know, and you want to lean on the running game a little bit, I think that's where Latavius Murray is going to have his bigger games. I think in an even kill kind of game where you know, it's really tight, or if the Saints happen to be trailing in those games, you're going to see Kamara used a little bit more. But the Saints are so good, it's just going to level out. I've got Kamara at 45% of the carries. I've got Latavius Murray at 40%. So I've got 203 and 180, you know, to Murray, which is right around in line with what Ingram had. Now, I'm not giving Murray the efficiency that Ingram used to have. You know, Ingram, I thought, was a very, very – you know, a really good runner who ran really well in this scheme. And so, you know, where Ingram would average up into the mid fours, I've only got Latavius Murray at a four. I have Alvin Kamara at a 4.75, which I don't do. It's very rare, but he's so good and he's been at a five. And what's amazing to me about Kamara, Matt, when I watch him run, is he just never gives anyone a direct angle on anything. Even if there's two defenders, it's like, I don't know how he processes all that information and relays it through his body and is able to bring all that together. Like I've seen Alvin Kamara take one big hit all of last year and I watched every snap and I may have missed one, but I mean a big hit. And it was Jalen Smith on Monday Night Football when Jalen Smith basically ear holed him right at the sideline, which was really an illegal hit. That's the only really big hit I saw Kamara take. I saw him take an awkward hit in his shins like a couple of times, but I just don't see guys get big blows on him, you know, and it's just, I don't know how he does it, but it's because it's not like he's juking all over the place. He has moves and he uses them, but he never overuses any one thing. And it's like always something in the bag of tricks. And he's got like that best move where he'll be right at the sideline and he'll just kind of do this little stop move. I can't tell you how many times I saw a defender miss a tackle, fly by him and go out of bounds. And this guy's still going. I'm just like, I don't know. It's like a video game whenever you're watching him. So, but I've got him at 200 carries. I've got him at 960 yards rushing. I've got him, Matt, at 11 touchdowns rushing. So he had 14 last year. Yeah. So do you. All right. Well, you're crazy. I'm still lower than you. So I know I haven't, I'm projecting only a median here. You're projecting the upside. And then, so I've got him at 80 catches, 700 yards receiving, and I've got him at 4 receiving touchdowns. So I've got him, you know, 15, 16 touchdowns total, you know, altogether. Just a great player. And talk about a player that's fun to watch, you know. I mean, when you watch him, it really – and you can still appreciate other runners, but it after watching him and then I go to the next game and I start watching another back, you know, it's like – and the other back could even be good, but it's just like, man, it makes you respect Kamara even that much more, or at least it does me, because this is not a guy that I never thought that Alvin Kamara would be this good. I'll just be honest. Oh, I did not think he was going to be this.
Because I thought he'd be a good receiving back, and he certainly has been that. But as a between the tackles runner and a guy with ball security issues entering the NFL, he did not have a one real issue with ball security since leaving Tennessee. So I don't know what Tennessee greased their balls with, but but certainly, you know, whatever it is, it hasn't happened in New Orleans, so that's good. But he, you know,
yeah. Hey, real quick on that, Matt, what do you see? Just like, because I love hearing you talk about this stuff. So when you think about what you saw with Kamara between the tackles, and now you look at Kamara between the tackles, is it something where you look back at it and was it more of an opportunity thing, or was it more of he probably thought he could get to the outside and just out, you know, outspeed people, and he often could, but maybe he really always had this in his bag, and now that he knew he had to use it, he could. I mean, what do you think is going on, you know, when you think about your evaluation of what you thought he could be between the tackles versus what you see now? I haven't gone back officially
and like really, really studied it, but I've seen so much of him. And I watched a lot of him in college that it felt pretty easy to say, which was he did think he could bounce it outside. He felt like that he had the speed to do that and he would get away with it more often, except when he faced top college teams. And usually when I see a player do that, they have problems transitioning to the pros. Like it takes them at least a year or two to kind of figure that out. You know, LeSean McCoy, Jamal Charles, good examples of guys who took the corner store way too much. But Kamara was like, what Kamara showed is he proved right away that he was told not to do it, or he may have noticed that he couldn't do it once or twice and just figured out, okay, this is what I need to do. And so that's one of those things that you're not going to see from the film. you're not going to see whether or not he learns lessons quickly from the film when he makes that transition, if he's repeatedly doing it on the film the wrong way. And that was kind of the case with him. He also, because he didn't present a lot of, you mentioned he didn't present a lot of great angles for defenders to hit. There were plays that you could look at that and maybe say that may project well for the NFL. But the creases were wider. The defenders were not quite as close. You know, there were situations like that where I look at some of these plays and say, still not seeing proof of that interior running, because it was just in the same process that I used where I would look at guys like, you know, Bishop Sankey or Andre Williams or Niall Davis and players that people really liked and I didn't like so much. Some of the same stuff that I saw with Kamara, I saw with these guys to an extent. I mean, I still had Alvin Kamara in my top 10 of backs, but he obviously should have been one of the top three guys. And he was if I looked at specifically isolating him as a space player, when it was just as a space player, he comes out strong in that level. But I was further down on him because of his between the tackles. And I think what basically it was is he's one of those guys that actually the coach said, this is what you need to do now. You can't do this anymore in the college game. And he said, okay, and was able to do it. And also just the ball security. The ball security was horrible at Alabama. I mean, at Tennessee. It was bad. That one wasn't as bad as, like, say, Miles Sanders, but it was bad. And the only backs that I've seen correct that very quickly have been Kamara and Sony Michel thus far. Those are the two guys who've had pretty bad, you know, ball security track records. And year one out of the gate, you're like, oh, like, you would have wondered if you would have looked at me cockeyed if you'd never seen them on college, you know, their college tape and me telling you that they had a ball security issue. So there might be hope for Miles Sanders this year for Philadelphia fans if that happens. But again, you know, when it comes to those situations, you want proof. So for me, I needed Alvin Kamara to prove it, and he proved it, you know, so that's kind of where I'm at with him.
Cool. So what do you think about Latavius Murray?
You know, I think Bennis is probably, yeah, I think Latavius Murray is going to be 150 attempts.
I'm sure he'll have 15 touchdowns, but I mean, besides that.
150 attempts, 635 yards for about 4.2 yards per carry. I do have him at 6 touchdowns. And I have him at 16 targets for 10 receptions, 71 yards, which is low for him because he can catch. And so I'm kind of still working out the reception angle for him. And I still wonder, you know, the Saints left the – he's no Mark Ingram. I'm glad that you mentioned, you know, Mark Ingram's such an efficient runner. He's a very smart runner, and he's going to do very well in Baltimore if he can stay healthy and that line plays up to its potential. He could be – he's another guy. Like, he and Devonta Freeman, give me those guys in the third or fourth round, even though you may be reaching to get Ingram. I'm okay with that. I'll take that risk. But – that means Murray. They say, well, there might be some other guys in that mix. Could it mean that if Divine Azigbo gets his stuff together, he makes a team and actually runs a little bit more? Does it mean that Kerwin Williams might be able to get a little bit more love and play? I mean, he's a guy that kind of reminded me of James Brooks, the old Chargers Bengals player, who was an all around. He was kind of Alvin Kamara before Alvin Kamara. You know, back in the day in the 80s and I think maybe early 90s. And I think Williams doesn't quite have that rushing ability, that vision, but he's a better player. He's one of those players that, you know, came off the undrafted kind. I think he was undrafted and Bruce Arians took a shine to him. And I think he's a guy that can be, he's a very good ball catcher. And I think he's someone that has that nice burst that could be a surprise in this offense if called upon. And then Jaquizz Rodgers is hanging around there, and he's a consummate professional who, you know, you saw Dirk Cutter say, you know what, Jameis, you keep throwing these interceptions, we're going to pound the ball 32 times with Jaquizz Rodgers against Carolina and win the game, you know? And so Rodgers to me is one of those, you know, short, but not, you know, or big, not short kind of guys or whatever you call it. He's short, not small. That's what it is. You know, kind of guys who can still get the job done if need be. Might give them a Pierre Thomas kind of feel, but not quite as versatile as what Thomas offered between the tackles. So there's some interesting guys behind Murray. Let's just put it that way. Who if Murray kind of falters a little bit, they might see some opportunities there.
Yeah, you might, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens with, you know, the target share. You know, Ingram in 2016 was at 8% on the games per game that he played. Ingram was at 12% in 2017. Last year, you know, remember he missed those first four games, but still this is a per game, you know, when he played. Last year, Ingram was at, it dropped down to 6%. Right. But Kamara was up at 20% last year, whereas the year before Kamara had been at 18%. So I think one area where we could see either Murray get a little bit more than what you have projected, or it's a third guy that you're talking about that picks up a little bit, you know, from a standpoint of catching balls. I've got Latavius Murray at 8% of the targets, you know, so kind of right in that lower area of where Mark Ingram operated, not as low as last year. You know, I didn't give him any of, you know, the 12% that Ingram had a few years back, but I have him at 8%, 70% catch rate. So I've got 31 catches for 245 yards, and I've got him at 1.5 touchdowns receiving. As far as rushing goes, I've got him at 180 carries, 4 yards per carry. So that's 700 yards. And I've got him at 7. I beat you, Matt. I've got him at 7 touchdowns. I think that's the first time that I've projected your touchdown.
And see, that makes me laugh rushing, because you did it with a player that I just don't like stylistically as a running back. So I'm probably lower than him, but
I am with you.
And the way the data works with it makes sense why you would have him higher in there. And actually, if to be honest, he has a green mark on my page, which basically says up the totals a little bit. So
guess what? Latavius Murray, until 2 days ago, I went back, you know, I'm always constantly reworking through these things, and every draft, when people would be taking Latavius Murray, like, he wasn't even on my radar for like another round and a half to be a pick. And so when that starts happening over and over, it doesn't mean you're going to change your mind, but when I see those things, I definitely go back and take another look at it. And I had done what you had done. I had him at 30% of the carries instead of 40. I had him at like 3 touchdowns. And I thought, you know, I was just being a dick to this guy. You know, I mean, I don't know why I was that low. I mean, it's a good offense. I only have them at 35% of their rushing touchdowns, you know, but they're just a good rushing team, and they have a good offensive line. They've got a little bit of a question mark at center, but they addressed it with free agency as well as the draft. So I expect them to get that secured. You know, so 7 rushing touchdowns, you know, would it surprise me if it's 6? No. Would it surprise me if it's 8? No. Because we've seen, you know, Mark Ingram's a better player. But we've seen Ingram, you know, get up and, you know, to the double digits. So he's still discounted from that, but it's a team that's going to be in the red zone a lot. You know, he's going to get some good looks behind a really good line is really where, you know, once I really reevaluated it, I thought, you know, he probably really should be closer to the value that some people think that he has versus what I had originally.
Part of the narrative was with him is that he had a golden opportunity in Oakland to be the man. And really never capitalized on it fully.
Yes.
And you can look at that and say, we'll see. And then you blame it all on Murray. And then you carry that. You force him to carry that basically with him throughout his career. Or you can look at it and say, did Oakland really have a strong offensive line? Was he really a good fit with what was going on there? Can we give him some benefit of the doubt? And so, you know, you kind of have to have an in-between to balance with that. And I think that that's what you've done pretty well here.
I've got him, you know, if fantasy players are listening, I have him in my third tier of running back. So the way I tier players, you know, I've got especially once I get to tiers 3, 4, and 5, I've got my PPR floors. Then I've got, you know, just kind of my floor players. And then I have my upside players. Right. And so, and then in this case, I also have a tier of guys that I just truly think, you know, are, you know, they're 3A running backs. I'd be happy to put them on my squad as my third runner I draft. And I could also easily use them as a running back too, depending on what happens. Right. So in the tier above, I've got Mark Ingram, Phillip Lindsay, Tevin Coleman, and Austin Eckler. But then in the tier below, which is kind of a 3 floor tier, I've got Lamar Miller and Latavius Murray right there together. So it's not a player I'm dying to take, but it's a player that if I'm in a pinch and maybe I started off heavy at receiver and maybe I swung upside on a Daryl Henderson or someone as my second back, and knowing that I can come back around and secure a guy like Latavius Murray to kind of start my year off with, he kind of fits into that kind of scenario. He's not a guy I'm actively targeting.
Yeah, I mean, I just look at Latavius Murray and all I think is, imagine if Peyton Barber were in this role in the Saints offense and we could stick Murray back and stick him in Tampa. I'd feel a little bit better about all that. But, you know, but I actually, you know, you wish the best for Murray and hopefully that he does that works out the way that it should. And maybe it was more on Oakland. But one thing.
Well, he is the opposite of Kamara. Talk about a guy that takes hits and a guy that has body parts like flinging every which direction when he's running. It's like an arm is
like a scarecrow,
you know, sticking out perpendicular. You know,
I mean,
it is crazy. It's like body parts are just going everywhere, and it's kind of weird. I'm guessing defenders have to get used to seeing that coming at them. That they're just like, what the hell is this thing? What is this? Coming at me because it doesn't look pretty.
Mondays when they see it afterwards, after they focused on his hips and just drove through him, you know. But at the same time, you know, obviously he's a good enough running back to have these types of opportunities in the league, and he's a talented player. But he is unconventional, to say the least. I don't know if we'd say this was an unconventional podcast, but certainly one of the things that has been great is your feedback. You know, and please, by all means, let us know what you think of these RSP casts. You can do that when you go to any of the outlets like Google Play, Stitcher, Podbean, Spotify, and iTunes to listen to us. And please subscribe and please rate and review. It's always very helpful when you can do that. And, you know, of course, if you want to give more extensive feedback to us, you're more than welcome to email me at mattwaldmanrsp@gmail.com and let me know what you'd like to see, if you feel like that's a more appropriate place to do so. And you can follow Dwayne at Dwayne McFarland on Twitter. You can check out his work at mattwaldmansrsp.com or mattwaldmanrsp.com, excuse me. And at that site, he and Mark just did an excellent piece of a project together where Dwayne studied the data and Mark studied the film, and they looked at Derek Carr and some of the things that we talked about in this podcast spawned some ideas for Dwayne to kind of look at that and say, how is Derek Carr under pressure? And how does, you know, and Mark kind of looked at over 100 pieces of over 100 film clips, and Dwayne looked at the data for the past several years, and they've come up with some ideas of what, you know, what Carr is, what he isn't, and what he could be with the help of John Gruden. And I would definitely highly recommend you guys checking that out. And we'll continue this podcast next week, focus on some more teams till we get through all 32, hopefully. And thank you again for listening. You guys have a great week.